This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, what a summer it's turning out to be. Certainly one of great achievement from the best and brightest of our country.
It has been, Mark. And so many exciting contests at the Olympics, shattering old records, whether it was Michael Phelps in the pool or Gabby Douglas in gymnastics, or maybe most of all, both of them working with their teams. Certainly showed what talent and perseverance we possess as a nation when we work hard and we work together. And just so exciting to see all those young people succeeding.
And in the midst of all of that, Margaret, we scored another successful landing. The rover Curiosity landed safely on Mars last week.
I heard about that. And although this is the seventh craft they've landed on Mars, our closest neighboring planet, still gives us a bit of a thrill, Mark. Just great to see advances in science and advances in being able to carry out some new dreams and visions.
It's another great moment for science and exploration. And yet it reminds us of how many frontiers we have yet to explore and how much teamwork is required to achieve all of these milestones.
Well, Mark, one challenging frontier here at home that's been out in front of us for decades is finding a cure for AIDS and ending AIDS for the next generation. And our guest today spoke with us recently from the floor of the AIDS 2012 conference in Washington, D.C., where tens of thousands of AIDS experts and activists came together to note the progress being made in the fight against the AIDS epidemic, which to date has impacted over 60 million people around the world.
Carl Schmidt is the director of the AIDS Institute and is a leading AIDS policy analyst and advisor in this country and around the globe. He'll be talking about the real hope for a cure for AIDS in our lifetime, new treatments for living with HIV, and how the health reform law is going to help that population live better and healthier lives.
Factcheck.org's Lori Robertson will look at some claims from the campaign trail pertaining to the Affordable Care Act and see how they stack up against reality.
But no matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by Googling CHC Radio.
And as always, if you have comments, email us at chcradio.com or find us on Facebook on the Conversations on Healthcare Radio show homepage. We love to hear from you.
We'll get to our guest, Carl Schmidt, in just a moment. But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headlines.
I'm Mariano here with these headline news. The ticket is named and up and running. Presumptive GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney has chosen his running mate. The choice of Congressman Paul Ryan, head of the Congressional Budget Committee, is being hailed by conservatives who support his controversial budget proposals, which slashes trillions of dollars in entitlement programs and for suggesting that Medicare and Medicaid should be phased out to a system of vouchers. Democrats, on the other hand, are seeing this election as a rallying cry for those who support the health care law under the Obama administration. Medicare, as well as the Affordable Care Act, are sure to be central themes in this year's election. One measure of the health care law seeks to reduce the number of costly hospital readmissions, one of the biggest drivers of health care costs, with over one in five Medicare beneficiaries being readmitted to hospital within 30 days of discharge. Over 2,000 hospitals across the country are being penalized by Medicare for not doing enough follow-up care with patients, resulting in those readmissions. The hospitals are balking at the penalties, saying they could do more harm to hospitals who likely could use resources to improve their follow-up care protocols. And where are kids getting fatter? Follow the snack policy, it would seem. A recent study out in the journal Pediatrics shows a clear link between states with and without policies governing snacks in schools, so-called competitive foods that are not part of the school lunch program. Kids in states with strict school snack policies for low-fat, low-sugar options and vending machines are leaner, on average, than kids in states without those policies. Experts say this should be a wake-up call to officials making policy with childhood obesity rates rising steadily since 1980 in this country. One-fifth of the child population in America is obese. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news.
We're speaking today with Carl Schmidt, a deputy executive director of the AIDS Institute, a national nonprofit organization that promotes action for social change in HIV/AIDS through public policy research, advocacy, and education. Mr. Schmidt was a member of the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS from 2007 to 2009, advising both the Bush and Obama administrations on policy initiatives to combat AIDS. He was recently named by several publications as one of the most effective AIDS policy activists in America. Mr. Schmidt, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
It's great to be here and to be talking from the International AIDS Conference.
You played a prominent role in the conference, bringing together 25,000 top scientists, activists, policy leaders. Secretary Clinton's there, Bill Gates, many more, really focusing on addressing the global epidemic of HIV and AIDS. The theme of this year's conference was turning the tide together, and there was much talk about the end game of HIV/AIDS being within sight. Now, we're hearing through the news media that there are numerous breakthroughs in drugs and protocol, disease management, and policy initiatives. Help us understand the magnitude of the current state of the epidemic, and where are the key fronts in the battle against HIV/AIDS now in 2012?
Yeah, you know, HIV has taken a huge toll on this world. 30 million people have already died. There's several million new infections every year, and over 30 million people living with AIDS in the world right now, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa. But here in the United States, there's an AIDS crisis as well. Over 1.2 million people living with HIV. That's a record. More people are living with HIV than ever before. And unfortunately, it's not on people's minds anymore, I guess because people are living longer. People are no longer contracting the disease and then being very ill and dying quickly within months. People are living with HIV, and someone's diagnosed with HIV today, you know, they could live another 60, 70, 80 years, almost normal lives. So they have to take medications every day. And that's one of the keys, you know, making sure that we get those medications to people because not everyone has them. We also have 50,000 new infections every year in the United States. That's 50,000 too many. We know how to prevent HIV. You could use condoms. That may not work well with everyone. And so there's new prevention methods as well. You know, there's new scientific breakthroughs. But HIV predominantly in the United States affects the poor. Over 60, 70% of the cases are gay men. And more of them are Black gay men, are Latino gay men. And, you know, 39% of all the new infections today are in people age 29 and below. So it shows that we're not getting the messages across, particularly to our youth. And the other segment that is most heavily impacted are African Americans, around half of all infections, even though they're, you know, 14% of the population are amongst the Black community. So that's what HIV looks like today. 1.2 million people living with HIV, but 50,000 new infections every year, and that's been relatively constant.
So, Mr. Schmidt, then I understand there's still thousands that stay on wait lists for drug assistance to be able to afford the drugs that they need to control the disease and to help us with preventing further transmission. Tell us about the role of health disparities and how they continue to pose a challenge to those who are fighting HIV/AIDS, and what's being done to address those disparities.
HIV predominantly affects minority communities, gay men of all races, ethnicities, the poor, the homeless. You know, people don't want to talk about these issues. You know, HIV is predominantly spread by sex, and people don't want to talk about sex, particularly in, you know, more conservative parts of our country. So there are wide disparities. I've been to a lot of sessions the last couple of days, and why Black gay men have the highest rates of infection in our country. And a lot of it has to do with education and poverty, huge disparities in HIV in our country.
Mr. Schmidt, your organization's been advocating for policy changes in America. And tell us about the national HIV/AIDS strategy you're advocating for in Washington. And could it lead to an end of the AIDS epidemic here in America?
Well, certainly, first of all, the entry ban. We had some really arcane emotional response to HIV in the 80s. And one of those laws that was put in effect was barring anyone who's HIV positive from coming into the United States. President Bush started the process, and under his leadership, he got Congress to go along, and he signed a law that lifted it. But then there was still administrative process, and that happened under President Obama administration. And we're able to have the conference here for the first time, bringing, you know, 30,000 people to the United States to this conference from over 200 countries. You know, you look back at AIDS over the last decade, and President Bush really showed great leadership with the creation of PEPFAR, the President's Emergency AIDS Relief Program, and changed the, you know, the face of Africa and the epidemic there. But as I said, there's a great epidemic here in the United States, and President Obama has really put the spotlight back on the domestic HIV crisis. 2 years ago, actually, he released the National HIV-AIDS Strategy that has three main goals. One is to reduce the number of infections, increase the number of people who are carrying treatment, and three, reduce health disparities. He also has a fourth that seeks to bring better coordination between all the federal agencies, both at the federal level and at the state government, to work better. Everyone seems siloed in the approach, and he's trying to get everyone to work together. So, you know, in reducing new infection, the goal there is to focus on the communities that are most impacted and making sure that there are prevention messages for those communities, and also making sure the money is spent in those areas. For care and treatment, and also I should say the president has shown great leadership by, in his annual budget, putting forth increases for HIV prevention.
Mr. Schmidt, as you talk about those policies of this administration, your organization has also lauded the Affordable Care Act, which you say is poised to make it possible for far more people who are HIV positive and maybe don't know it to get tested and to get into treatment. And of course, there's many provisions in the Affordable Care Act that will improve conditions for those in the AIDS community, as it will for anybody living with health problems and chronic health conditions. But you've also expressed a worry about existing programs like the Ryan White program that most people are familiar with, and that could be jeopardized. Tell us how you see the Affordable Care Act both improving outcomes and access for the HIV/AIDS population, but also what are these threats to dismantling some of the infrastructure that's been successful in helping us to deal with the epidemic?
The Affordable Care Act is really the game changer for HIV/AIDS care in the country. You know, there's so many people that don't have health insurance today. Many of them are the poor. And also, you know, people with HIV have been discriminated against because they have a pre-existing condition. Now with the Affordable Care Act, there's an end to a ban on people with pre-existing conditions. That is no longer a barrier. So people through the Medicaid expansion and through getting health insurance, they can access health care for the first time. You know, right now, only around 30 to 40% of people with HIV in the United States are getting access to care and treatment, and only around 28% actually have a suppressed viral load. That's what the treatment, that's the goal. So we have a long ways to go, and the Affordable Care Act is going to open up opportunities to provide drugs and health care to many, many people with HIV.
We're speaking today with Carl Schmid, Deputy Executive Director of the AIDS Institute. Mr. Schmid had a prominent role at the AIDS 2012 summit. He's taken a few moments out from the conference to talk to us. Mr. Schmid, it's no irony that the conference was held in the nation's capital, which happens to be one of the highest HIV infection rates in the nation. You've received accolades for your work in attempting to impact the population there. Tell us about how you're taking ideas shared from the conference and applying them to impact in local communities like the District of Columbia.
There is some reason why the conference came to Washington, D.C. Not only is the U.S. government the largest provider of AIDS relief abroad, but, you know, it's our nation's capital, and we do have a serious AIDS epidemic here. You know, this conference was in the works for the last couple of years. It put pressure on the U.S. government, but also the district government, to get its act together. And I think I really have to praise the local government here in addressing the AIDS epidemic. They are leaders like Connecticut in providing low-income people with access to health care. They really are providing increased testing. They even do testing at their motor vehicle departments here. But also, there's treatment immediately for people who test positive. So that has really helped the AIDS crisis here. And also, there's just having the conference here, putting AIDS back on the front page, that helps raise people's consciousness
Mr. Schmidt, I'd like to talk a little more about testing and preventing transmission. You've praised the actions of Howard Koh at Health and Human Services, and when he called for HIV testing to be included in the 26 preventive screening tests required to achieve the goals set forth in the Healthy People 2020 initiative. And I think 200,000 Americans are reported to have HIV infection and don't know they have it. So getting that testing is critical, but lots of barriers. You mentioned the motor vehicle department as a place to do testing. I know I'm beginning to hear about over-the-counter testing, incentives. Tell us, what's the strategy and what are the recommended key elements from your organization's point of view? What are you advocating?
The CDC came out with recommendations several years ago that said that everyone between the ages of 16 and 64 should receive a HIV test when they go to the doctor. You know, you go to the doctor, you get your blood pressure, you get your temperature taken, and they check for your cholesterol. Well, they should be testing for HIV as well. You know, there's certain populations that are greater at risk for HIV. But there's a lot of people that don't know they're at risk for HIV, particularly women. And who is to know who's at risk and who's not? So it's really important that everyone in their lifetime gets an HIV test. But certain people should be getting it more often. But number one, we need to make sure doctors offer the test. And that's not happening. So we need to increase those efforts. So anyone, when they go into a doctor's office, the doctor should say they should get tested. Now, pregnant women, I think you see most of the doctors offer their patients an HIV test. But, you know, the other issue is someone has to pay for those tests. And that's another beautiful thing about the healthcare reform, that there's coverage of preventive services, because we really want to keep people healthy. And so HIV testing and other preventive services are covered, for particularly those who are at risk. And starting August 1st, every private insurance plan has to cover an HIV test once a year for sexually active women. That's a real change. Now we have to expand that to men as well. So I think as the Affordable Care Act is implemented, we'll see more coverage of HIV testing in the future.
Mr. Schmidt, let's talk about moving beyond simple testing to prevention. Certainly the first step is universal testing so that everyone knows their status. And the next step is making treatment accessible to all who are HIV positive. You've said that treatment is prevention because the new class of drugs bring the viral loads down so low that an HIV positive person is 96% less likely to transmit to partners. What other policy and tools for prevention are needed to help eradicate AIDS?
Thing that's really missing is sexual education. You know, since HIV predominantly affects gay men, those sex education programs have to include all sexual orientation. And who's to know, age 16, 17, 18, what one's sexual orientation is? But they have to, you know, be made aware, because they are the ones who are getting infected these days, the young. And they need education. They cannot be left out. AIDS is still a crisis in our country, but there are things that you can do to prevent HIV.
Mr. Schmidt, I'd like to ask you to maybe help our listeners understand something. And now there's one more element that's been introduced that I'm not sure people understand very much, because we've seen headlines about a drug to block HIV transmission, and we're talking about the recently approved Truvada. So while we don't usually talk about specific therapeutics on our show, which is focused more on reform and innovation, I'd like to give you a chance to explain to our listeners, what role is Truvada going to play in this emerging, hopefully, end of the epidemic in our lifetimes?
First of all, it's only going to be used and recommended for high-risk individuals. So perhaps someone is HIV positive, their partner is HIV negative. They would be able to take the drug. You know, and maybe some gay men with multiple sex partners, they might also be a good candidate for this drug. You know, it costs money, a lot of money. And, you know, people don't have that luxury. We don't have enough money to treat all the people in the United States who are HIV positive, let alone providing the drug, which someone has to take every single day. So I don't know its use, but it is another tool in our prevention toolkit.
Mr. Schmidt, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in healthcare innovations that our listeners at Conversations should be keeping an eye on?
Healthcare reform. That's the game changer for our country. And for HIV, you know, people don't have access today to health care and to the medications that we know save people's lives. And this will really be a game changer, having access to Medicaid, you know, going to a doctor, getting the medication. That will change HIV in the United States.
We've been speaking with Carl Schmid, Executive Director of the AIDS Institute, speaking to us today from the AIDS Conference 2012 in Washington, D.C. Mr. Schmid, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, I thought we'd look at the topic of the week, and that's the Medicare plan included in Representative Paul Ryan's budget proposal. Ryan's plan is getting a lot more attention now that he's Mitt Romney's running mate. So what would this plan do? Well, for current seniors, those who are on Medicare now, nothing would change. But starting a decade from now, in 2023, new Medicare beneficiaries would enter a new premium support system, where seniors would pick from a choice of private plans or traditional Medicare, that would still be a choice, on a new Medicare exchange, and they'd get government-provided subsidies to help them purchase these plans. The plan also slowly increases the retirement age from 65 to 67 by 2034. These premium support payments, they would be tied to the second cheapest plan, whether that's the traditional Medicare or one of these private plans that are offered. And Ryan's plan says that that second cheapest policy can't grow more than gross domestic product plus 0.5 percentage points. This is where it gets a little complicated. And if the cost does grow faster than that, then Congress is required to step in and take some unspecified action. Now, one Democratic claim that we've seen again and again is that seniors would end up paying $6,000 more under Ryan's plan than they would under traditional Medicare. That claim actually pertains to Ryan's old plan that he released last year. This new plan is now a little more generous in terms of how those subsidies or premium support payments increase over time. But, you know, it still does call for less government spending than the current Medicare system. And we don't have a good analysis from the Congressional Budget Office on what exactly this latest plan would do to seniors' costs. It would, however, be a major change for Medicare. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. When it comes to two-wheeling it, Copenhagen leaves other modern cities in the dust. Over a third of commuters in the Danish capital cycle to work in a city that puts plenty of bike roads out there for the cycling populace, including a cycling superhighway currently under construction that will link all of the city sections via a cycle-only road system. And add to that a bicycle library where you can check out all kinds of innovative bikes for up to several days for free. That program makes experimental bikes available for consumers to test drive. Bikes that can haul a small load, carry several people, even bikes with protection against bad weather. The benefits of the hundreds of miles of cycling highways are many. Carbon and diesel emissions are reduced in the city, making air quality much healthier than in other modern metropolises. The daily exercise of cycling to and from work gives an additional health benefit to the commuters. And there's cost. The practice saves commuters money in gas costs, and the city saves money in road maintenance as well. And here's an additional social benefit. Cyclers have a chance to meet other cyclers in the course of their commute. And other cities are catching on. In advance of the Olympics, London installed an urban cycling system and a bike sharing program, and New York has added 300 miles of cycling roadway across the five boroughs. But the Big Apple still has a long way to go to catch up to Copenhagen. The manager of the Bicycle Innovation Lab in Copenhagen, who makes their experimental bikes available, says it's about exploring the possibilities of bicyclism, which he says encompasses much more than the cycling. It requires you to explore the infrastructure, the design, the health benefits of creating a more livable city. A bicycle superhighway, making the roads accessible for healthy bike commuting, and a free cycle library to expand the transport possibilities for those riders? Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org and brought to you by the Community Health Center.